Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted,
the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
Welcome to episode 140 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
So, we're getting ready to talk about episode 204.
But before we do that,
plays today. But before we do that, we have a few pieces of listener feedback, actually two. And put it this way, we're happy we got to. We got a lot of email. We got some comments on Twitter and Facebook. But again, we're trying to keep this audio since that's our major format.
And I'm real tired of hearing Ginger's voice.
Oh my goodness. So we did get a few. The reason this is so short this week is because when I got back from Scotland, and that's the trip that caused Summer to ban me from traveling, at least internationally, when the show's on. So thanks for the 4 month per year or whatever travel ban, Sam.
You're welcome. And you're welcome, listeners.
Yeah, because you guys will get timely shows.
Dude, that was the most untimely show we've ever had.
It was like 3 days late. Wait, if you count Sunday, it was like 4 days late.
Yeah.
No, wait, was it up Thursday night?
It was up late.
I think it was 5 days late. So because of that, not that anyone couldn't
She's
have
pregnant,
called in,
y'all. Just what? Kidding.
Me?
It's 5 days late.
Summer.
The show's pregnant.
Oh, I was like, what? There is not.
I mean, I don't know what you did in Scotland.
What happens in Scotland stays in Scotland. And
unless you brought it back through the stones.
There are no stones. It's called an airplane.
You literally...
take all the wind out of the...
Yes.
I have no joke. I mean, I do have jokes, but okay.
Sometimes you're more of a straight man than is ever necessary.
I'm a straight woman. I know what you mean, though. Okay. So to our feedback, the first one is from...
Cindy. Hi, this is Cindy from Maryland. I'm also at Cheshlin on Twitter. I just wanted to say I love the new characters, Mother Hildegard, Fergus, Bhutan, they're all amazing. What makes my heart ache is the distance between Jamie and Claire. I'm glad that they have something and not just completely ignoring Jamie's return to health and all that. But it does make my heart ache every time I see them together. The end of the episode when Claire was torn about what to do with regards to telling him about Blackjack and Murtaugh's reaction was just amazing. Murtaugh's been almost stealing every scene he's been in, and that makes me very happy also. It's fun to watch them all together. I look forward to hearing your thoughts. Have a great one. Bye.
So Cindy, Murtaugh is the greatest Dainsiller until Fergus. That chicken leg.
Dude. No, but Murtaugh is definitely like a fan favorite, I would say. Which is sad. I'm glad
he's like hashtag alternative sexy.
Why alternative?
I don't know, because he's not my typical, like, I don't say, oh my gosh, I want that dude with that beard and those eyes. It's just, I mean, he's Scottish, so that's like a whole, that's going to sound really wrong what I almost said. There's a lot, I don't want to say overlook because that sounds really bad, but there's a lot that I would look outside of my, whatever my type is, for someone who's, you have like Scottish. A smile on your face. Yeah, who's someone who's Scottish, because once they open their mouth, it's like, I become like blind.
You get drunk on their accent?
Yeah, I guess so.
You get your accent goggles on?
I guess. Yeah, maybe. But maybe. I'm not saying him. He's good looking. Don't get me wrong. But Scottish accents in general do that to me.
I want you to know that if he ever showed up to a party without his beard, I'd be like, yeah, go away.
You may not even recognize
him. That's my point. It doesn't even look like him anymore. Like, I think I said this a few weeks ago. They had shown a picture of him somewhere and he had shaved.
Oh my gosh. And it was like it did not look like him.
Yeah. No, it was shocking.
Totally different.
So we know that, you know, by the nature of Culloden, most men don't survive it. If all of, for, I mean, are we, how many of us are, we're mostly book readers, right?
I don't want to assume anything.
Well,
because
I would say that if you had a character that was destined to not make it through a season that had a chance of them trying to keep, I would say that it would probably be, I think Murtaugh would be top of the list for probably the writers and for all the fans.
To everything you just said. Mm-hmm. And our second piece of listener feedback comes from Lisa T.
Hi, ladies. It's Lisa T. I thought I'd finally give you guys a call and give you my feedback rather than just emailing it or texting it. I wanted to comment a little bit on Ep 203. I thought it was great. And I just wanted to comment briefly because I know there's not a ton of time, but I absolutely loved Fergus. He's a wonderful addition to the show. And I was so happy that Murtaugh and Suzette were having some, flagrante in the afternoon. But I thought that that was actually a really interesting parallel to Ep 110, where Murtaugh's knocking at the door while Jamie's having a snack bar. Taste of the snack bar. Sorry about that. A little crude, but anyway. And that was where Murtaugh was knocking at the door, and Jamie and Claire would not stop what they were doing for the knocking. And in this case, Claire just barged in, and you know, she didn't knock, and found Suzette and Murtaugh having some fun. So that's all I have to say. But I really look forward to listening to the podcast, and have a great night. Thanks so much. Bye.
Okay, Lisa. Yeah, so you didn't hear me. I mean, you'll hear me when you listen back to this episode. Just before we played yours, I was commenting on the first one, on Cindy's, and saying, like, I mentioned Shane Steelers. Thank you.
Sean Connery? That was the worst Sean Connery ever.
Scene Steelers. Murtaugh's totally one of them. And so are Rupert and Angus, definitely scene stealers. Murtaugh sees a scene stealer by just standing there. But oh my gosh, Fergus. Love. I think it's, I'm going to probably butcher this. It's either Romain or Roman Beru or Beru. Yeah. So it's Roman B, the little 14-year-old French actor who does Fergus so well, so perfectly well. And it just makes me sad. Yeah. Okay. Can't say anything more. But yeah, love Fergus. And yeah, that scene with, Murtaugh and Suzette, It's another side of Murtaugh we haven't seen before, so it was kind of cool.
It's kind of cool. Little afternoon tonight. Delight.
Delight. It could have been afternoon tonight, as far as I know. Afternoon tonight to morning.
To now. Anyway.
So that was that. And now on to our discussion of episode 204, Useful Occupations. No. 204, La Dame Blanche.
Good God.
And in my defense, I was not looking at my notes. So there you go. You do have the right episode. You are in the right place.
Ginger's not, but you are.
Yes, you're fine. Okay, let me start by saying that even knowing what is coming up, knowing what Diana has written, that Diana has written an episode, and knowing how the book Dragonfly and Amber ends, this episode, this writing, will be difficult to top. Tony Graffia, you've done it again. Well done. Now, the opening title, it's a carriage wheel being disabled, right? So something's afoot. And I wrote down, think Long Con.
I'm thinking foreshadowing. Did you think I was going to say foreskin? Foreshadowing.
No. Okay. So they are, the first scene is at Versailles and they're playing chess. Now, Duvalnet brings up names for le petit bon pain, the little loaf of bread, or the little good bread, which is, I guess, a euphemism for the little bébé, le bébé.
Like a bun in the oven.
Yeah, there you go. Le petit, le bun, like a bon, yeah, yes. And the name that he meant, no, that Claire brings up, Lambert, and Jamie does not like that.
He immediately poops on it.
And but then Jamie brings up Dalhousie.
You know, it's like you're trying to top each other for worst baby name. But at least Claire's had like a familial tie to it after her uncle Lambert.
Yes. And she says that Dalhousie sounds more like a sneeze.
God bless you.
So LeComte is there and he's exposing. He walks around and he exposes Duvalnet's chess game. So what his strategy is, what he's doing.
It's not quite what we want Stanley Weber to be exposing.
Oh my goodness, Summer.
Entirely too, now many, he'll never too talk. Many layers of blue
now
in
he'll
this scene.
Never talk to us.
He might.
So Claire's distracting Jamie, or so Duvalnet says, that or either Duvernay or Leconte, someone says that he's being distracted. And Claire is like, fine, you know, if I'm distracting you. And she walks away. And in true Claire fashion, didn't we say last week and many other times, when Claire goes on a walk alone, nothing good happens, even inside Versailles. So Claire leaves. She's on a walk alone. And she goes and gets some wine, as Claire will. Duvernay tells Jamie that Louis is interested in giving substantial amount of money to his cause, meaning the Jacobite cause, quote, his cause, because we know it's not really Jamie's cause. He's just putting on, not airs, but he's doing, it's for show. So Claire is down to that glass of wine, like the wino she is, and we see her start to look funny. Meanwhile, Leconte is in the background watching.
I thought it was interesting that he was able to dose the right wine glass that was literally sitting. Like, I don't know how long the guy on the side was standing there with that one glass of wine on his tray. I'm like, was he waving other people off? Like, oh, no, no, you can't have this. No, this isn't for you.
This has a name on it. You just can't see it.
Exactly. And then, you know, it was almost like they had an unspoken agreement where they just kind of walked towards each other and she took the wine from him. So it was strange for me to think that nobody else tried to take that glass of wine.
Coincidental. Yeah. So Katrina does choking, being kicked, because she obviously was kicked in episode 206. Katrina does choking / being kicked / getting sick quite well. Not just physically what you see, but what you hear in her face and the contortions and sounds she makes. So my question is, in the book, they were at the palace for the night when she got sick and she was already in bed sleeping and having that dream about snakes or a snake when she started feeling ill and had her explosive diarrhea. They called in the king's physician, and in the series, they went a different way. So they're not, as far as we know, they weren't going to spend the night at Versailles. We don't know that. They didn't show that. They didn't say that. So the next thing is she's sick. Jamie picks her up and they walk out. And the next thing we see is they're in bed at Jared's. So did they wait to take her to Jared's to have her see the doctor, or did they have a doctor at the palace anyway, and then once she was kind of stabilized, take her to...
Oh, I don't think they addressed that at all.
Yeah, me either.
I am glad that they did not leave in the public bout of explosive diarrhea.
With all the servants around and...
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, that would have been stinky.
It's not even that so much. It's that I hate watching people be embarrassed. And I can't see how, like, if there's a movie where there's somebody who's supposed to go up and make a speech, and as they're walking up, something happens to their clothing, or they flub, or they mess up, I am literally uncomfortable watching it.
You're mortified
for them. Yeah, I'm uncomfortable watching it. And I think that I could watch any other scene in Outlander more comfortably than I could watch a scene of somebody being intentionally embarrassed. Or unintentionally embarrassed. Just embarrassed. Yeah. I would be embarrassed.
It's hard to watch that. And I think that's a good sign that you're not a psychopath or a sociopath. Did you just almost lose your water there? Mm-hmm. So Summer has empathy. Okay, so we're going to see a lot.
Don't spread that around, you guys.
Exactly. Remember, she's a robot. Robot. Maybe the empathetic robot. No. It's a switch.
That's an oxymoron.
It's mostly off. Yeah. Okay, so we're going to see a lot of Leconte in this episode, and I'm going to start some words for him. Feel free to join me at any time. In this scene... He's hashtag...
Don't do it.
Sexy cocky.
Don't do it.
Earlier...
I was praying you would not do that.
Earlier, when outing Duvernay's moves, he's hashtag sexy mean or hashtag sexy bored. Back at Jared's in Paris, which I will not sing. So it's not poison, Claire says, but rather bitter cascara. Now remember Master Raymond, right? Oh, I can't do that. I don't know. It sounds so wrong to me. Remember what Master Raymond had said. About the bitter cascara.
Or you could do like his servant who goes, maître.
I'll do only half French.
Okay.
But Claire's magic. Marshmallow tea is the tonic, she says.
Marshmallows fix everything.
I do like marshmallows except for the gelatin.
So you don't like marshmallows?
Oh, I still like them. I usually don't know. So they think together, they do think it was Leconte who had done the poisoning. The way he was staring at you, Claire. Yeah, we already said. We already told you. That's hashtag sexy cocky.
Oh, Ginger. I don't like that one. Can we pick another one? Can you come up with another one for that
Oh,
one?
There's plenty coming up.
Because it sounds like you're talking about a penis.
I'm really not.
Like a little one. Like it's a nickname, like sexy cocky. I don't know.
Okay, so I wrote, ha, interesting, Claire. Regarding Jamie attacking or killing Leconte, we don't have proof, she says. And right now, a public scandal could cause the prince to distance himself from you. So regarding money and the Jacobites, if Sandringham gives Charles the money, the king will likely join as well. So more stuff develops, more things to think about. And yeah. So Jamie suggests hosting a dinner and inviting Le Duc and the prince so they can meet. He wants to stage an occasion for the prince to make a mistake and expose himself for the delusional popinjay that he is. Claire doesn't quite agree. And then she drops the bomb. Randall is alive. Thus ensues the longest 30 seconds in the entire series. She'll say something. Well, the camera's on her the entire time. So she'll say something. Jamie's got nothing. She'll say something. Jamie's got nothing. She says the thing again. Jamie's got nothing. When the camera finally goes to him, his face is almost beatific. It's like,
that's not what it looked like at all.
Well, anyway, I
should have taken a picture surprise. Of that.
I'm so glad you didn't.
So we could post it. We'd like Ginger's beatific face. It's not beatific at all.
That's true. So as I wrote, surprise, Jamie. I forget my apostrophe S's a little bit sometimes in my excitement. Surprise, Jamie's ecstatic. It's a gift, he says. Wonderful news. So knowing Randall is alive means he has something to look forward to. He just hasn't said what yet, though we can all imagine. And I wrote in caps, the Jamie and Claire theme is big time right here.
Well, I found that this would be the perfect time for her to tell him. She's just been violently ill. You can't be mad at somebody who's just been violently ill.
And is carrying your bebe.
That too.
Look on her face is awesome. She's just like, why? Please go back to hashtag sexy cocky.
Nope. I was never going to go there.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Seriously, like I can't. I'm sneering right now and I can't make it stop.
So Jared's in Paris the next morning. Myrta tells Claire, Jamie's cheery.
Oh, I meant to say, I feel like every time for the first probably third to half of the show, every time they showed one of Claire's hands, it was always Frank's ring until they have their little reconciliation later on. And then directly after that, it was Jamie's ring. And I don't know if that was intentional, if it was just the way they had the camera set up, but I noticed that.
So Myrta says that Jamie's cheery and Claire says, yep, I did the deed. No big. And by the deed, not yet, but she told him at Master Raymond's apothecary the same day. He greets her with a Madonna. Cascara, he says, was only sold to a servant, and he didn't recognize the person. So Claire's asking, basically saying, like, look, you said that you sold it to someone. Who is it to? Because someone tried to poison me, homeboy. And he says that he only sold it to a servant, and he didn't recognize the person. Now, Summer, do you think that Master Raymond went into so much detail about Cascara and what it does and why he would use it, obviously, so no one died, but the whole thing? Do you think he went into so much detail about it at her last visit to sort of warn or prepare her? Explaining that he sold it to people and that it would make the purchaser happy their victim would suffer, but that they wouldn't die. So kind of all's fair in love war. I mean, it's interesting, and she is a healer, so it's not bad information for her to know about what it does. But to tell her so much, maybe that was kind of his way to prepare her in a bit, because later on he tells her that she's his concern. She is what matters to him right now.
I think you started to ask me a question and then answered it yourself.
No, it was two different things. I'm saying, do you think he told her that to prepare her? Because later on, he says, you're my concern. You're the one I'm interested in right now.
I don't know. It could have gone either way. I mean, she was asking him about poison and kind of being like, I can't believe you would sell this. And then he says, no, I have it. I don't sell it. I mean, it could have been a great coincidence. He could have shaken his bones in the back room and thought that he needed to tell her about bitter cascara ahead of time. I mean, it could have gotten anything. I was not there.
Raymond's servant tells them that they're being watched. And so they go into his secret room with the bones. I wrote, this is the bestest. I love it. I was waiting for this because in the book, when she first visits him, she doesn't go into the secret chamber the first visit, right?
I thought it was. I thought
was
it took
the first
her back.
One? I maybe just a little bit longer. I couldn't say. I'd have to go reread it, but I knew there was a back room, and I'm so glad we finally got to see it. John Gary Steele, a dude.
Now, in the books, I believe it was through a small opening, like through a fireplace, I think, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, they had to hunch down
to get through this tiny little opening. Though having seen some medieval fireplaces in Scotland, they were not all tiny. Some of them were quite enormous. But they did say that when Jamie came looking for her that one time, he had to bend over a lot to peer in there to try to see her. But this one in the series was, I believe, a false wall, which was just as cool. I would love to have secret passages in my house.
We can try and make that happen because we have a TARDIS. So if we can, actually, it's quite apt for a show about Outlander, about all things Outlander, to have a TARDIS, don't you think? Because we should be able to go back to anywhere now or forward.
Dun, 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 dun. What noise was that?
I'm trying to start the Doctor. Da, da, da,
okay.
Da, da. Trying to do the Doctor Who theme.
This is my pain face because you're...
It's better than the Jared face. Oh my goodness. Okay, so bones, bones, bones. Love it. She recognizes a dinosaur skull. Doesn't, like, you know, tell us the genus and species, but she recognizes that it is an animal that's long gone. Listen to everything Raymond says, and I mean everything. He says the following: I'm fascinated by things not of this time. And this is a huge hint right there. And also, what or who is Claire? Master Raymond is totally looking at her. When he says this, he's not looking at the bones. He's looking at her. Now, when she says she's worried about an old friend, right away, Raymond says it's a he. He says, does he have a name? He does not even allow for the possibility of it being a female. Claire doesn't say what type of person it is. She doesn't pick up on this, or at least doesn't react to it, though. Raymond asks, is he in danger? Claire says, I believe his future is in doubt. So this is a question about time. Everything in the back office, if you will, can be linked to time and interest in time. So he says the bones will give us an answer. Now, do you think that was a little bit of sleight of hand? He had that thing with the bones in the bottom and you looked in, you couldn't see it. And then
he said it was sleight of hand,
but he didn't like put the bones in. I think the bones are already there. And then he remove some little panel or whatever, because you don't hear anything. You know what I mean?
No, he didn't toss them in. He didn't.
That's what I mean. I think they were already in there.
Either that or, you know, he drugged her briefly. Maybe when you walked through the wall, there was like a hallucinatory spray that sprayed her face and then made it impossible to see bones. I don't know. It's just as likely as whatever you just said.
No, mine's a little easier. I could actually recreate mine. I couldn't recreate yours.
Could you?
Oh, sure.
I'm waiting for this sleight of hand feat that you've just promised.
Summer, I don't have anything with me. I'm saying I could build something and put a little slot
that's
in it.
That's what
and pull
I'm saying.
Out.
I'm expecting you to do it, but it has to be as convincing as what they just did on TV.
Well, they didn't show him pulling anything out.
I'm glad.
Claire recognizes the oracle cast on the hide, etc. So he has the bones and he throws them out on this zebra hide. And it's very African. And she,
a lot of the things in that back room are very African.
Yeah, and she mentions the Zulu. Now, I wrote, this is totally reminiscent of Mrs. Graham. Did you get that vibe? The oracle bones. It's another way of reading something.
Yeah.
Divination.
I mean, it was another divination scene. She seems to be on the lookout for diviners.
Diviners?
Whatever.
For divine diviners. Okay, so Raymond says, you will see him again. And this freaks Claire out.
Yes, but he didn't specify how she would see him again, because technically he's not born yet. So in the timeline, the great timeline of life, she will see him in the future because she's born in the future. Or does it mean she will go back to the future? So it could really go either way at this point. I mean, we kind of know as book readers, and because we saw the first episode, what actually transpires.
We all know as viewers. Dear listeners, as viewers, you know that she does see him again. So Raymond says, quote, you are my concern. And he gives her a necklace. He says it's for protection. And it's a white, like a white opaque crystal, like kind of shiny. Mm-hmm. And he says it will turn color in the presence of poison. And then he winks. Did you see a little wink?
I'm kind of excited to see
his wink.
No, I'm not. I'm excited to see the stone change color.
Or dissolve or whatever it does.
Whatever it does. It's got to do something. They say it. Yep. Changes color.
Okay, then we're at Louise's house. Now, after leaving Raymond, did you get the transition shot? So you end with Raymond. So it's all about time there. And then you go to Louise's and the first shot is of a...
Cuckoo clock.
So time. And it was 4 p.m. I'm not sure if that has any meaning here. But I did check the time and I wrote a clock totally about time. I love you, Tony Graffia. Oh, my goodness. So, yeah, rock on. So Mary's staying with Louise, right?
I believe
That's what we think. Okay. So Louise asks her to feed the monkey, and it's not a euphemism. the monkey's name is Colette, and we learn that she has to be careful because Colette bites everyone but Louise herself. Now, Louise tells Claire about her pregnancy. She is pregnant, and she says, Thank the good Lord they kept that she is married. Her husband is Jules, and the baby is not Jules.
It's her
lover. At first, she says she wants to get rid of it. The only thing we hear from Louise about her lover is that he is, quote, a dreamer.
I don't know if this was intentional or not, but did anyone else notice the ribbons on her dress and her dialogue? Crack me up. She's in a dress that's covered in like these really ornate like ribbons all around the neckline, and they're all a little bit frayed. Like they're all kind of, looks like the ribbons are fraying. And she says the line on a very tight close-up of her head and shoulders. She says, "I'm afraid not." And I laugh. And I'm a nerd because I thought that was funny.
No, that's hysterical. And some other great gems from her are, "My husband would have me arrested for adultery, or worse, sent to a convent." And also, after Claire's suggestion, "You mean sleep with my husband? My lover would be furious." So nicely foreshadowing what we saw in episode 201, Louise also says, "How will I raise a child with a father who isn't his?" And Claire answers, "Remember this, Claire. All that matters is that the child is brought up with love." Truer words, Claire. Truer words. And that's what the Rev said, too. Jared's house, probably that same night. Jamie's home, and he strips down to his shirt, and he climbs on top of Claire. Boom. And he starts to get frisky, and she's totally going to go along with it. And then she's like raising up his shirt, and she sees the bite on his thighs. And I wrote, "Yes! They kept the bites on the thighs." Okay, so Jamie's like, "Nope, yes, I did come from a brothel, but no, it's not that one person." He says, "She got a wee bit carried away," but he says, "It was an entirely different girl." So, yeah, which not makes really it helping
better.
Himself.
Like, it was like foot and mouth, like the exactly. entire scene. He was just not making it better.
And talking about what they did or what she was trying to do with him to him, he says to Claire, quote, "I don't suppose a gently reared lady such as yourself would be familiar with the term soixante neuf." Claire scoffs and says, "I know what a 69 is."
Yes, it is.
Now, even though he's legitimately attempting to explain how he got the marks and why he's in such a good mood, Claire understandably sees only the bites, and she's upset, and he's...
Well, I mean, you have to put it all together. It's not just... It's not just that he's been hanging out at a whorehouse and that he may or may not have been doing things with other women. It's that he's been not doing things with her, and she's been being patient with him because of how damaged he is. So, I mean, it's not just...
It's like a big F you.
Yeah.
Now, Jamie, of course, the reason he's so tickled and happy is because whether it's with his wife or a whore, the thing is, he wasn't able to... He was afraid he wouldn't be able to get in that space again where he could be intimate with someone or feel lust for someone. And he is ecstatic because it happened with the hoor. Now, nothing, it wasn't consummated. Nothing came through of it. Nothing was totally done. But of course, she left her mark on him. And understandably, Claire is upset. But also understandably, Jamie is ecstatic because he... After having been tortured and raped and brutalized and psychologically terrorized, is, like we said before, they had to handle the PTSD differently in the series because they didn't do
the timeline.
The Abbey, yeah. The same. Well, they didn't do the what was done in the book in the Abbey. And if you want to know what that was, then you can re-listen to our read-along or just read the book on your own and find out what happened in the Abbey in the book. I get it. I totally get Claire's side of things because she's like, "Are you kidding me?" And I totally get his side of things. And that's why he came home to his wife. Once he realized what was going on and he's like, "Oh my gosh, I can respond. I'm feeling lust. This is amazing. I need to go home to my wife." So rather than, basically they need to talk. They need to talk. They haven't done a lot of talking. And now he's trying to explain it. And it's a lot of time has gone by without them communicating about him. And it's mostly him, right? He has to feel comfortable to be able to tell her things. So, and then that's what happens tonight, is, or in this show, he comes out and he tells her, it just comes out. So Claire is missing her husband's touch. He is filled with passion by a whore. He's finally not seeing Randall in front of his eyes, only it was another woman and not his wife that started this. And he says, Randall is alive. Now he can be the one to end his life. And he wants to feel the way he once did with his wife. They've both been struggling with different things. Claire is stuck in her head, but Jamie has not been sharing with her. This scene is devastating. The truth comes out. I wrote, Tony, I love you. You are amazing. Just amazing. So one of the things that I wanted to say earlier, and I'll probably say it again for this episode, is that I probably cried more at this episode than I did at any other one thus far in this season. I know I did get like very verklempt and like very close to getting some tears, or at least a sheen, when we were in New York at the premiere, when it goes from the 20th century back to the 18th century and we see Jamie finally, like after halfway through. That was emotional because you're like, okay, we're finally back in the book, right? You're finally back there. It was so great to see them together again after almost a year, right? The show ended last May, so not quite a year, but almost. It was so great to see them that it was very emotional. But my thing is, and Summer and I watch separately anyway, I don't feel comfortable being emotional around a ton of people, or at least showing, not being emotional. Like if we're at a party or if there's a reason to show emotion, I will do so. You know, you've heard me. Summer, I am like the most drop at the drop of a hat, get tears in my eyes kind of person.
Oh God.
Yeah. But I don't want to cry in a theater with 1,000 people.
Why can't you always pretend you're in a theater with 1,000 people?
That's just rude. I do not instead block my feelings.
Instead of
robot,
assaulting me.
Robot.
Instead of assaulting me with your emotions.
I don't assault you. We just had a little interesting exchange there with the eyeballs. I don't know. So
harass me? You harass me with your emotions?
Nah, never. Mm-hmm. So I guess what I'm trying to say is there's so much from the book in this episode. There's so much from the book in every episode, but this, goodness me, this episode, maybe Tony just lucked out.
Well,
but
what?
She had amazing material.
She did. But what I loved about this was that they kept everything moving forward, but were able to keep some of the things we thought we lost last season. His entire speech about having a fortress inside that, you know, was destroyed and his soul was trying to hide under a blade of grass. Like that is directly from the first book. So when that didn't get put in season one, it was kind of like, oh, well, I guess it's okay. We didn't need it. You know, we can move this plot forward without it. But then when the speech came back in this week's episode, that made me emotional. I was like, oh, they kept it. They thought it was as important as I did.
And I wrote, that's right, Claire, tell him to talk to you. And Jamie, rise up. Then he has to go sleep elsewhere. Why? He didn't open up.
Can we talk about how easily she was able to find him? That house looks ginormous. And she literally, I mean, how many rooms did she have to look in before she found him? Is there only one other guest room with a bed in it? I just think I was like, I thought that was very...
She did kind of peek in at first, I think.
Right, but it looked like it was the only room she checked.
Well, we don't know what she did beforehand.
We don't. Of course we don't.
So then she takes the step to bring them back together. So Jamie did share about what he felt about the fortress inside, that he lost his fortress and now he felt that they had built a lean-to. So his soul...
With the roof.
Yes. So his soul was now slightly more protected. But then he goes off. And then she takes the step to bring them back together. Jamie had to open up.
Literally.
Literally. To really open up. She had to make the physical union happen. I am 99.9% sure that this is the love scene they fought for. Did you remember hearing in some interview or some article that there was a scene, because there's not a lot of sex scenes in this, between them at least, in this season, they said. But there was one that they thought was really important to keep and they fought for it. And I'm pretty sure this was it. This is my guess. I wrote, what a beautiful, beautiful scene. And it's so needed. Not only for the characters to come back together because for 3 episodes they've been apart, not only for other developments coming in the season, but they need grounding. The mending of Jamie, the mending of their relationship happened in the end of Outlander in the books. Here we are able to see the adaptation's version of this, and it is beautiful. It's not unusual to show a love scene of a visibly obvious pregnant woman, is it?
It's not unusual. I think it is unusual.
No, it's not usual.
You said it's not unusual. Okay, and I know that because in my head I heard Tom Jones.
I was totally going to cut that out, but I got to leave it now. So it's not usual to show a love scene of a visibly obvious pregnant woman, is it? I don't see a lot.
There's fetish porn about it.
I was about to say, unless it's...
I've never seen it.
And this is not fetish porn, by the way?
I mean, for some people it might be.
Awesome.
It's like lady porn.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stop moaning when I say lady porn. It's making me uncomfortable.
Jamie is mostly in moonlight, whereas normally he's the sun, right? He represents the sun. In the book and in the show, he's called the sun, or he's in the sun a lot. And Claire enters the room, mostly in shadow. She comes to him and joins him in the light. They are together where they can't hide from each other anymore, both now in the light. Now this is the completion of the fortress. He has his lean-to. Then there's a noise on the prince.
There's not a noise on the prince.
Then there's a noise on the roof. The prince. He runs across the roof and ends up coming in through a window, right? And we find out he's been bitten. He says he's come to his friend's house. That's the whole point, but some kind of friend makes me laugh. And I wrote, this is freaking from the books. Oh my gosh, Summer. All in caps, in case you couldn't tell.
So, I feel like everything we talked about last week that we were like, I don't know if they're going to do that. They're probably not going to use it. I mean, at this point, they're probably not going to do it. All came to fruition in this episode, which I thought was great.
Totes. So Claire isn't too impressed by Charles. She bows somewhat awkwardly.
It's hard to be impressed by a rain-soaked rat man.
He doesn't even look at her when he says, pleasure to meet you, madame.
Because he doesn't mean it. Like, he's so condescending.
He's in his own head. He doesn't care or know or think about anybody else but himself.
You will doctor me and we will talk.
No, you will doctor me and you'll get me whiskey. Mm-hmm. And then we'll get me talk. Yeah. And then he says, mark me.
God.
I'm so over this.
Dude, I feel like we should make this a drinking game tonight. Just because.
I've already tweeted about it. I think it'll be. I just don't have anything to drink.
Yeah, you do. You have tons of whiskey up there.
I don't want to get busy. I mean.
What? Is that what happens when you drink whiskey? What happened in Scotland? What aren't you telling me?
No.
Y'all, no. You want to know how to make Ginger get busy? Give her whiskey.
I mean, I don't want to get tipsy.
That's a totally different thing.
I know. If I get too tipsy, I shouldn't be tweeting. That's all I'm trying to say. So Charles.
That's exactly when you should be tweeting.
No. Charles and Louise are having a petit bon pain.
A bun in the oven.
A new plan. Their new plan is to use the affair to their advantage. Expose the baby news. Plan to unhinge Charles.
I almost feel bad for Charles. Like, once the dinner party started, I almost felt bad for him.
Kinda. Now, but I think I skipped something that's important. So,
I mean, I'm sure I skipped.
Claire deduces from the fact that he has a monkey bite that his lover is Louise. And that's how Jamie and Claire make their new plan. Oh, okay, did you notice this? After Lecomte's ship is set ablaze, they kiss. Here, after they decide to try to ruin the prince's chances with Sandringham, etc., they kiss.
Well, I've been watching a lot of Supernatural recently, and anytime they make a deal with a demon at a crossroads, they kiss.
So they've got some kind of timing, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I'm just saying. Not Jamie and Claire don't kiss every time it happens in Supernatural. I'm saying... That whoever is making a deal, they might.
You don't know. Our writers may have really full lives.
We could time them together. But
that would be a crossover.
Anytime a character makes a deal with a demon at the crossroad, they seal the deal with a kiss.
Even boy, boy, girl, girl?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, there's been.
Is it just like, can it be like, or is it like always passionate?
I mean, I don't think it's not. It's not.
I've never seen the show.
It's a transactionary, but it's not. Yeah. It's usually a little more than a peck.
So they have to show the meaning of what they're trying to do as far as the deal.
Apparently.
Has to be reflected. It has to be legit. Can't be like a meh. Which is not a kiss anyway. So, back at Jared's.
And the face you made when you made that wasn't even a kiss face. So, if that's the noise you make.
And I drink whiskey and get busy in Scotland.
Why are people not beating down our door to make out with you, Ginger?
You're rude.
Meh.
I know.
Yeah, you are. Do it again. It's so hot.
No, I'm wearing sweats and I shouldn't.
We live in California. What's wrong with you?
It was colder outside last night.
Right.
Back at Jared's in Paris, 1 week later, the day of the dinner party, or the night when Shiz goes down. Remember the long game we talked about earlier, or the long con I mentioned? Remember it. That should have been a period, not a question mark. Okay.
Remember it?
Listener. Now, listener, remember the long con I talked about earlier? There was an explosion at an armory. Victims of the explosion were taken to L'Hôpital des Anges. Claire is notified of this, and she goes to help out. She tells Jamie she'll be back before dark. She takes Myrta and Fergus. So far, what goes under potential long con? There's an explosion, which means they need more hands on deck at L'Hôpital. And we saw a carriage wheel, or the pin being taken out of the wheel, right? So there are numerous things happening. At L'Hôpital, Mary Hawkins is there. And Fergus is doing dirk practice. Mary and Fergus would be cute together.
I thought this was weird that they randomly decided to have Mary Hawkins go to L'Hôpital with Claire of this dinner party, because they didn't introduce it the way that it was in the book.
In the book, it was all of the ladies. Yeah, but in the book, I think she's been before to help her.
In the book, the first time they go to L'Hôpital, Claire's there, Louise is there. Okay. It's all of the society women go there to do their volunteer time, and they almost all, you know, fall out, but Claire stays and Mary stays because Mary and Claire are buds. But because they didn't do that in the beginning, I thought it was weird to kind of have her there, especially on the night of a dinner party.
No, that's true.
That she's supposed to go to. I thought it was weird.
Yeah. So Mary and Fergus, I wrote, would be a cute couple. They're almost the same size. She's older than him.
That alone is not couple-worthy news.
No, but they're both adorable, is what I'm saying. So Myrta is cute when he sulks, which he does a lot. I mean, that's all. Basically all he does is sulk. Fergus knows lots about women in love. When you grow up, did we learn about where he grew up yet?
Well, we know
when you spend a lot of time in a brothel, put it that way, you're going to learn a lot about women.
Way.
Period.
Way.
He says there are a lot of signs that Mary Hawkins is in love. And then we see Bouton again. There's a lot of screaming. Not going to lie.
I kind
of wanted to drug that dude. It almost hurt my head. And then we see Monsieur Fauré, the bone setter. He's there. After he helps,
the segue from the conversation with Fergus and Myrta outside and Myrta throwing his dagger down and stabbing that fruit. And then all of a sudden the patient screaming was so well done. Like that was like perfectly
edited.
Stabbed
the gourd and then...
Yes.
To the scream after you stabbed it. Yeah, that was shocking.
I was like, why is the gourd screaming?
Because it's not.
It's not a gourd.
So after he does the whole nerve thing with the brass pin, and I mean, it's totally, dude, again, how much of this, basically the question is not how much is from the book, how much is not from the book? Seriously, that directly from the book. So after they're done and they've numbed him enough so that Claire can help reset the leg before she goes off. Well, before he goes off to help the next person, he has Claire and Mary, at least the idea is, to get them to add this lotion or this hangman's grease to help with pain, apparently. And we learn that Monsieur Fauré is the king's executioner, and the hangman's grease is made from hanged men.
I mean,
kind of gross.
It's nice, though, once in a while to purchase an item that is exactly what they say it is. Because, like, even if you go into shops and stuff, like, oh, this is, you know, eye of whatever. And it's really not. So it was kind of refreshing that this particular occasion that the hangman's grease was actually grease from a hanged man.
And when Mother Hildegard says that the people they get are better than nothing, they take what help they can. And she tells Claire, you're a great deal better than nothing. I thought, aw, go for the...
It was like almost a backhanded compliment. It was, I mean, I know it was well meant and what she meant by it. But a great deal more than nothing really only means you're something. It doesn't mean that you're
a great something.
Right. So it's like if I have no money and I'm broke. However, if I have a penny... I'm technically not broke anymore, but I'm a good deal more than broke, but I'm not really, you know, living in it.
And when it's time to go home, voila, the wheel of the carriage is broken. They have to walk. Of course, they won't get home before dark. Back at Jared's, The guests have begun to arrive for the dinner party.
And the jewels. I'm just kidding.
Jamie keeps his cool at the mention of Randall. Of course, that's Alexander Randall. We are introduced to many people, including Silas Hawkins and Le Vicomte Marigny, and who is interestingly not an old man. He's a widower, but not an old man like he is in the books. So it's 8 p.m. now. We have another clock. And I want to go through and count the clocks in the show now, or count all the mentions of time, because I keep seeing clocks. And then Prince Charles arrives, and I wrote, hashtag mark me. Now we're back to the streets of Paris. It's dark. Mary mentions Randall. It's still dark. Mary and Alex, we find out, have been secretly corresponding. And then they are attacked. Myrta goes down. The men grab Claire and Mary, and Mary is assaulted and raped. We see on the hand of the person who would be about to assault and potentially rape Claire, this like bright, not bright, but a birthmark.
It's a port wine stain.
Yes, which is different birthmark. From the book. But I think better.
It is better because I'll tell you what, that I would notice across the room.
The book was a mole.
The book was a mole. The book and was a mole that didn't.
A little hard to believe.
It wasn't like a heart-shaped mole.
No, it was just a mole.
It was a mole. Place. But that's where the description ended. And I had a hard time believing that she would ever be able to recognize.
From across the room.
A man by a hand mole across the room. So yes. I agree with the adaptation of the port wine stain.
Because it has to be obvious. So. Again, remember the birthmark. Remember the or the spot, the port wine stain. And then when he's like, when he's, the attacker is so gratified or so shocked or so surprised when he's, and he yells, a virgin, I have a virgin. Oh my gosh, I have a virgin. Like, I just wrote yuck. Back at Jared's, the Comte and his wife, the Comtesse Saint-Germain, arrive. They were not originally invited. Sandringham had taken it upon himself.
Don't you hate it when people you hate but invite anyway? Bring people you hate more than them to a party you had.
Because it happens every third Tuesday.
In high school, it sure did.
It did?
Sure it did. When you're younger and you throw like a party, you're like, oh yeah, I guess you can invite him. I don't really like him, but you know, he's friends with so-and-so. And then he shows up and brings these three other people that you really despise, but now they're there and you can't be mean. I mean, I guess you could.
Okay, I meant to write the Duke of Sandringham, and I wrote Dude Sandringham instead of Duke. So the Duke of Sandringham, in case you haven't made up your mind yet, we know for sure he's a baddie, definitely a baddie. Back on the streets of Paris, where they are being attacked, is Claire,
I think her hood falls back.
Her hood falls back, and they see her face. And her would-be attacker says, La Dame Blanche, c'est la Dame Blanche. And I wrote, in all caps, La Dame Blanche, yes! We get it. This is the title of the episode. This is the reveal. So this is very important. We'll find out more later. It'll be interesting to see. But after they are screaming, La Dame Blanche, La Dame Blanche, all the people scatter and they run away. And it's just, Fergus is gone. He's gone to find Jamie. He's gone to the house. And Myrta kind of wakes up. And Claire helps Mary up. Back at Jared's, more guests. I wrote, OMG, this never ends. I guess they have to keep people coming in because the rapery takes time.
Wow. Rapery? Is that a word?
No, I just wrote it. So Louise and Jules arrive. And Charles.
Cue the most awkward introduction ever.
Oh my gosh. Okay. And Charles virtually sucks off Louise's hand.
Right. And what's so crazy I'm trying to envision what is going on inside of her husband's brain. Because you're under the assumption that these three have never met, as far as the husband knows. Yeah. So these are three strangers. I don't know you. I don't know, you know, you don't know my wife. And now this guy comes up, has been introduced to you, and then pretty much blows you off, goes straight up to your wife and is like, thanks for bringing this beautiful jewel with you. And then proceeds to like make out with her hand. Nobody got off on it. Nobody was
I don't mean get off, but yeah, suck on her hand is what I'm saying almost.
Yeah, but sucking off is a totally different
thing. I understand.
Thing.
I meant suck on.
Suck on, suck off. It's like the Karate Kid.
So then I wrote, there's trouble on the street where you live. Outside, Jamie sees Claire and Myrta and Mary. So there's something going on. And who is it that alerts Jamie?
Fergus? I don't know.
Yeah. It is. It's Fergus. Yeah. So he goes outside. Alex then comes out. So I wrote down, I don't know how he finds it. Maybe because he's eating with the servants and some of the servants came out. So my guess is it was because he was with the servants anyway. and he sees
Well,
Mary.
They were bringing them in the back.
Yeah.
Which is probably through the kitchens.
Yes, but the servants were already coming out toward them. Like, Suzette was out there. And
Well, her man was injured. Of course she was out there.
Yeah, but the point is she was out there, and if...
Randall was eating with the butler.
Who's a servant.
Yes. So if he was off That's with the saying. Servants...
He would have seen them leave and gone to see what the commotion was about. So Randall comes out and sees her. I wrote, now they all know that the two like each other, because he's totally talking about his love for her and everything. They move Mary up to the guest room using the back stairs to hide her, and Alex is going to watch over her. Now she, just like in the book, she was given laudanum.
Which terrible idea.
Yeah, which can shut her up, but also give her visions. Now it's dinner time.
But can we talk about the fact that Claire leaves Alex Randall to decide what's too little and what's enough? She just, it's don't give her too much or she could have visions. But I'm not going to tell you what that means and what too much is. I'm not going to tell you what the right amount is, or even give you maybe a measuring spoon to decide how much you should or should not give her. I'm just going to tell you, don't give her too much and hope that you can figure it out on your own. And he didn't even give her any. So she was clearly already pre-dosed too much.
So Claire is getting ready for dinner and she puts on the poison protection necklace. Claire finds out LeComte is there. Uh-oh, because that was not part of the plan. She joins the party and LeComte only has eyes for her. Hashtag sexy interested.
You're really bad at hashtags.
I never said I was good, ever.
Okay.
Louise and Jules are all good. The bebe is safe, we learn, because Jamie makes the announcement.
That was awkward.
He beats them to it. And he's like, yeah. Jules is like, yeah, we haven't really said it, but that's okay. That's okay.
But if we can go back just a,
yeah, of course.
A hair. I enjoy how all of the women's costumes come with built-in armrests.
On the skirts.
Their skirts. They all. Everyone's got their little elbows resting on their skirts as they walk. They must never have, like... tired arms ever.
Back up in the back room, in the guest room, I wrote, Alex and Mary, so sweet. Alex is so sweet. They're going to be, they're just very sweet. Pregnant Claire is drinky Claire. Actually, that's just normal Claire.
Yeah, I'm like, I would say difference. The pregnancy hasn't slowed her down, no. But I don't think she drinks any more or less than she used to.
I wrote, in all caps, that is the longest table ever. Maybe it was just the angle or how tight they traveled.
There weren't
over
that
it.
Many people there.
I know, but it was so long. The Duke is quite entertaining. What do popes do anyway, he says. The prince is not impressed by Sandringham. And Sandringham goes on and tells some jokes. Apparently he's good at them.
I feel like it's a pissing contest. This whole dinner is a pissing contest. And it's like with Charles trying to prove that he's important enough to warrant this dude giving him his money. But at the same time, Charles is being effed with by everyone else at the table. And by everyone else, I mean Jamie and Claire. And also the duress of having Louise sitting across from him. And then Sandringham is just trying to be the life of the party like he always is, which is strange because he's a dick. But I guess even dicks like being popular.
Now, Le Comtesse Saint-Germain is Gaia Weiss, right? That was the woman from Vikings.
I've watched all of Vikings and I didn't recognize her. I guess when they say Vikings, I just assume it's going to be Lagertha because she's the face I always remember. Or Siggy. She's Poron. She's the son's
wife.
The slave wife that gets the face all mangled.
Oh, yeah. I can see that. So we think that LeComte is behind the attack, correct? LeComte is watching her all night, but he also was watching her at that chess match earlier in the episode. And then there's a lot more mark me. And I wrote, oh my gosh, hashtag mark me. I just can't take it anymore. This is too much. The prince asks the Duke if he's married. And we find out he's not.
Of course he's not.
Because
he likes the boys. And it's not legal. Like literally boys. He likes young
dudes.
Maybe not like, I'm not saying children. He just likes young boys.
LeComte eats sexy again. Hashtag sexy bouche. Jamie outs le petit bon pain of the Marquis. Jules says he's in the dark as to the prince's meaning. The prince agrees, quote, you are a man in the dark indeed, when he's talking about, basically referring kind of to his being cuckolded, right?
Well, and the fact that it's not his baby.
Oh, well, yeah, yeah.
And his wife has been doing him on the side.
So there's a lot of reference to light and dark in this series. Remember earlier when Claire joined Jamie in the bed and she came into his moonlight? They consummated their marriage again and they came into the light together. The dark of the street when Claire and Mary were attacked. And now the prince's mentioning of Jules literally being in the dark, or figuratively, I guess, because of the baby and their relationship. At the same time, Mary wakes up and freaks out in her room, and she runs out of the room. Claire, back downstairs, is fingering her necklace.
I hate that word.
Lecomte's wife admires it. Claire describes it and says what it is, and Lecomte says she's too modest. He says it has meaning for those who believe such tales. It changes color in the presence of poison. Now, this is important. The same thing has been mentioned twice and by different people. So either Lecomte knew of the stone from Raymond, or Raymond and Lecomte knew of the stone from the same source or a common source. The bottom line is Raymond and Lecomte have the same knowledge about something as magical and or mysterious as this. Why they have the same knowledge, we do not yet know. So, he also still eats sexy with a fork. Hashtag sexy fork.
Though I do think he had a point about... I'm ignoring you, by the way. I do think he... Did you say sexy fork?
Did you truly ignore me?
Yes.
You didn't... Yeah, I said sexy fork.
I didn't hear it, but I think I heard it, and then it kind of permeated into my brain and bothered me.
Oh, love it.
Comte has a point, because she was in the books. She was wearing that necklace out to dinner parties outside of her house. I think... To wear it in your house definitely is not a comforting thing for your guests. If you can't trust your own people to feed you without poisoning you, why would they not also feel unsafe in her presence? I don't know. That it was strange. A strange choice. But I guess since they're probably 86ing most of the dinner parties that happen in the book, because that gets cumbersome, it was probably their one and done chance to have that moment.
I wrote, Claire gives good at the Lecomte is saying this, and he just goes back to eating like... And what?
It's like, I ain't scared of you.
Yep. And Claire gives good scoff. Hashtag sexy scoff. So yes, one of my hashtags was for Claire. So Alex and Mary, I wrote, are playing tag. He's trying to calm her. He's chasing her, trying to calm her down. And she screams. She's seeing visions. She's under the effect of this drug, right? And well, she's reliving the attack.
In her defense, his version of tag does look an awful lot like rape.
Like rapery?
like, I'm not surprised that the people caught them in the other room and they walked in on it. They thought he was raping her because that's what it looked like. He should really work on his tag.
Because I've never played tag like that either.
You're missing out.
What was that noise again?
I don't even remember.
Me either.
Burr.
Something like that. Okay. See, I can't even do it. I can't even be consistent in my noises. So she's reliving the attack as she's under the effects of this drug still. So, of course, this attracts attention and... from the other room, and everyone comes running into their room. Mary is ruined now that everybody knows. Yep. Her uncle and her fiancé are incensed. Le Duc finds it a tad entertaining, but then he's like, oh, yeah, that's right. I better go.
Well,
and
first he
sneaks
like,
out.
He's like,
and he
I pulls really a, wanted dessert.
Bye, Felicia.
But first he was like, I was really hoping for dessert. And then he was like, maybe I'm not that hungry. But I would like to point out that Stanley Weber uttered... his first English.
Yep.
When speaking to the prince.
Oui, c'est vrai. So all the people, just like in the book, start fighting. And it's like a big,
turned into like a mosh pit. Like yeah. They were all, was, all they needed
I
was.
I need to go back and listen to what the music was like. This just sounds like this would be like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, almost like a fun musical farce there.
I feel like if you took that scene and put heavy metal over it would still be appropriate. And then the Comte was like, I'll take care of it. I'll call the police. And I was like, that's exactly. Helpful.
Exactly. And this has one of the best endings ever. The camera goes to the table where everything's turned over or everything's empty and the food's left. And we have Gavroche.
Nope.
I mean, Fergus is going to town on the buffet.
He is.
And that's how our favorite episode thus
and
far
ends. A boy after my own heart. He goes straight for the wine.
Oh, he does.
No, yeah, that's the first thing he touches.
Oh, my goodness.
Glass of wine.
Go, Fergus. Go, Fergus. Awesome possum. So that is episode 204.
Arguably my favorite of the season so far.
Even though we know we've only seen four of them. Pretty darn. Pretty darn. So, dear listeners, what do you think of 204? What did you think? Was it your favorite? Was there stuff that you loved, stuff that you thought was missed, even though it was so full of stuff from the book, but so juicy? What did you think of Tony's writing? What did you think of the directing? Anything, everything, the costumes, everything's up for conversation. And most importantly, did you agree with us? Did you disagree with us? Did we miss something? Because we usually do. because we're human. And like the whole, I forget what the music was like at the very end. How can you forget like the very end? I did. So let us know what you thought of any of this, all of this, and give us a call at our listener feedback line, 916-604-4777, or get us through SpeakPipe on our website. Thank you so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode discussion, and that will be about 205 Untimely Resurrections by new writer Richard Kamen. We are so looking forward to that.
Thank you to our generous audio host, audioboom.com. Our audioboom channel is www.audioboom.com/channel/OutlanderPod. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at OutlanderPod. Find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/OutlanderPod or email us at OutlanderPod@gmail.com.